We'll begin tonight in Exodus chapter 21. And this is really starting a section of a lot of individual ordinances, rules, laws that pertain basically to the everyday lives of these Hebrews. And a lot of these rules and ordinances deal with their cattle, with the relationships one to another, and also deal with their relationship with God. So these are the things that they need to know, and they need to be written down, as Moses is going to do, and he is doing. So there's a lot of individual rules and ordinances that may have pertinence to us today, but at least the principles involved in these are effective for today. And so we'll look at those briefly as we can in these two chapters, and we'll do that. Now, if we handled the Ten Commandments last time, and we started with that. And, of course, that's the kernel of the faith. And I want to suggest something to you, maybe an analogy, maybe it'll fit, maybe it won't. But if you look at the two great laws, which we see in Matthew chapter 22, and I'll read that in 36 through 40. Jesus is being asked, "Teacher, what is the great commandment of the law?" Now, there are many commandments, but they're trying to trap him. And Jesus said to them, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the great and foremost commandment." Verse 39, "The second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend the whole law and the prophets." Everything concerning God is built on these. And I was thinking about that. Let's just say that's a house. And let's say that's our foundation, you know, the slab underneath it. So these things are built on this. And as we come up from that slab, we're going to see that we've got the Ten Commandments, and which is a great summation. It's a specific summation of a basically kind of a cliff note sort of thing of overview of the rules and laws that God wants us to know. So I'm thinking that's maybe the frame of the building, the superstructure of the building. And if we look at that, we can look at Exodus 20.1. And in 20.1, I think I'll just do it this way. "Then God spoke all these words to Moses." Then God spoke all these words. At some point here, Moses got to write these down. That's what he's beginning to do. This is what he's going to do. And as he writes these down, beginning with those Ten Commandments, then he begins at that next point that we're going to jump over to 20 and 17, which was what we handled last time. And in 20 and 17, we got the beginning there of, at the end of the rules, the last commandment. But also in that next, in 10:23, is when he starts to say, here's commandments. Here's things that's going to be everyday things for you to think about. These are going to be things that are going to be specific to you in reference to how to worship God, to view this Lord who brought you out of Egypt, the God of the Exodus. And so beginning in Exodus 20:23, you make no other gods. You did a lot of things there we handled last time with the idea of how to view God, how to view him in worship, how to view him in reverence to him. And rebuilding from that, okay, from this kernel here, this overview here, as a second step, again, frame of a building, what about to finish out your house? What about to finish out all the fixtures inside? What all those specific things that make a structure a home, structure a house? And so that's what's going to beginning to happen here in verse 20:23. And let's see, we can do it with that. We can think over in 24:3. towards the end of this, it says in 24:3. Go up here. Then Moses came and recounted to the people all the words of the Lord and all the ordinances. And all the people answered with one voice and said, all the words which the Lord has spoken, we will do. And verse 24:4, Moses wrote down all the words of the Lord. Then he arose early in the morning and built an altar. And then we go down to 24:7. Then he took the book of the covenant and read it in the hearing of the people. And they said, all that the Lord has spoken, we will do, and we will be obedient. Moses is writing down these laws. And that's what I want to continue with today in these next chapters. As we go through, and that'll be beginning in 21:1. In 21:1. Now, there's a lot of variance in here, a lot of different issues that they're talking about. But one of the first things he starts with in 21:1 is calling these ordinances, calling these sort of things that are going to apply to Israel. And it starts off in 21:2 through 21:6, dealing with male slaves. But what about slaves? Are slaves approved? Are they forbidden? Are they regulated? What's the view here of these scriptures, this guidance, these laws, these ordinances for these Hebrews at this time? Again, through Moses, from God to Moses to his people. Now, in Exodus 21:2, it says, if you buy a Hebrew slave, he shall serve for 6 years, but on the seventh he shall go out as a free man without payment. If he comes alone, he shall go out alone. If he is the husband of a wife, then his wife shall go out with him. If a master gives him a wife, and she bears him sons or daughters, the wife and her children shall belong to her master, and he shall go out alone. 21:5, but if the slave plainly says, I love my master, my wife and my children, I will not go out as a free man. And 21:6, then his master shall bring him to God, and he shall bring him to the door of the doorpost, and his master shall pierce his ear with an awl, and he shall serve him permanently. Now, we're talking about a male slave here. We're talking about a male slave who comes in. He's given a wife by the master, another slave, female. And what happens? They have children. They have children. So he's released after 6 years from his bondage, from his duties as a slave, but that he's given a choice. Do you want to stay? Do you want to stay? There's some rules ahead for family. Do you want to stay with this woman that you had children with? But if you stay, we're going to put a hole in your ear that's going to be there permanently. And then you'll be with me permanently. So one aspect here of family life, family life. Now, well, is that cruel? Let me expand on that a second. All right? Let's look briefly at Deuteronomy 15. Deuteronomy 15, 17 and 18. And expands on this someone. I just want to use this as an example. That when God talks about slavery, or regulates it, in this case, in Deuteronomy 15, 12 through 18, if your kinsman, a Hebrew, man or woman, is sold to you, then he shall serve you 6 years. But in the seventh year, you shall set him free. And when you set him free, you shall not send him away empty-handed. You shall furnish him liberally from your flock and from your threshing floor and from your wine vat. You shall give to him as the Lord your God has blessed you. Verse 15, and you shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. And a pointer back to the slavery there, right? Okay? And they were under many pointers. And the Lord your God redeemed you Therefore I command you this today, verse 16, and it shall come about if he says to you, I will not go out from you because he loves you and your household, since he fares well with you, then you shall take an awl and pierce it through his ear into the door, and he shall be your servant forever. And also you shall do likewise with me, with your maidservant. So, yes, he was released. Yes, he was a slave. Yes, he served that master. But when the release time came, did he just throw him out? Can you say compassion in this slavery they had? It may be an indentured servant. Maybe the better name for that. But the point is, though, in slavery, what's the contrast with slavery here and slavery under Egyptian bondage? Great contrast, isn't there? Great contrast. And what can we say? What can we say? There's compassion. There's expected work to be done. But there's also a release time on it. And so there's just a contrast there that God has instructed these people at this time to live under slavery. Yes, sir.
Doug, these passages here dealing with slaves and slavery, we may think that slavery and slaves are wrong because it has a connotation to us because of what's happened in this country, you know, several hundred years ago. But clearly, and we just read here, since there, God's not condemning slave or slavery. We've got regulations. So it's not evil in and of itself. And if you look at the other versions, American Standard in King James, they have the word slave and the word servant. So maybe to help our thinking toward evil, our connotation, maybe a better light to look at it in terms of a higher servant and not have the connotation that we have. Can we start reading the regulations of slavery? Well, how can God even allow to have these regulations? Well, it's a little bit different here because it's, the way I look at it, it's more of a servitude. Hired for a limited time, part of a household, and God has regulations for that. It doesn't mean this.
And we'll see also that sometimes people, how they enter into this service, okay, to this slavery. Well, sometimes a father would just sell the kids into it, okay, because of being poor or whatever it is. But there's things that happen in this, with this society that accommodated this society. And God's dealing with the situation you have at hand. And he's dealing with the best he can to be compassionate and caring, okay, for these people who would serve. Now, it's interesting, if we go through 21:7 through 21:11, we're dealing now with female slaves. Now, females are treated different. Females are treated different. And again, it's a thing at this time here, God's regulating it. Now, and these are laws for them, ordinance for them. If a man sells his daughter as a female slave, a maidservant, she is not to go free as the male slaves do. Remember, they could live after 6 years. And if she is displeasing in the eyes of her master, who designated her for himself, then he shall let her be redeemed. He does not have authority to sell her to a foreign people because of his unfairness to her. If he designates her for his son, he shall deal with her according to the custom of daughters. I can explain all these if you want to. If he takes to himself another woman, that's the son, he may not reduce her food, reduce her clothing, or her conjugal rights. And of course, 21:11, and if he will not do these three things for her, then she shall go out for nothing without payment of money. Sometimes we can think of this as a wife. We can think of this as a concubine. We can think of this as a servant. Okay? Of course, conjugal rights is expanding that. And there's the father apparently had a lot of control over who marries his son, who he marries, who he chooses as a concubine. So there's a lot of that about, not to mention control of the wealth. So this one has a lot of explanation in it, and we can talk about that later or now if you want to. But the point is, here's a female slave who is sold, brought into this, has lesser rights than the male. But there's still some, can I say honor? I guess so, because of like custom of daughters, what it says there. If these things do not occur, you can still be treated as a daughter in that family, which is good. Or if you just provide those items, okay, any one of those items, you can still stay within that keeping. And at the end there, if the son chooses not to have this woman for some reason, then she's set free. So there's a lot of things to deal with slavery, service, okay, that sometimes I don't quite understand myself in this one. But the point is, there's still a compassion, there's still a service and care. It's not just shoved off somewhere, okay, as a slave would be. So just a thing to think about, all right? The next one, Exodus 21:12, is really one to think about that's going to inject itself in a lot of these ordinances. And it's dealing with death. It's dealing with the idea of putting someone to death by law, by ordinance, as instructions from Lord. So this 21:12 is a good verse to remember. He who strikes a man so that he dies shall surely be put to death. Also, you can think about all these, as I mentioned a while ago, as that pyramid of the two great commandments to the ten to these many, that these are explained. You can almost pretty well every one of the little ordinances, I'll say, okay, of the little ordinances can be applied to the Ten Commandments. One of them in one way or another. See the way the progression of things move, I guess you call it a pyramid or whatever. And then, of course, to the two great commandments in Matthew 22. So, he strikes a man so he dies, shall surely be put to death. But if he did not lie, and if he did not lie in wait for him, see, it's premeditated, has a difference now, but God let him fall into his hand, then I will appoint you a place for which he may flee. So he did strike and kill somebody. And it was murder. And the sentence is death. But God does not want vengeance by that individual, vengeance. So that's why it says here, God will appoint a place in which he may be for his trial, for the witnesses, for those things that prove one way or another. But the point is, let the law, let the judges, let those ones who are trained by Moses, those fives and tens and twenties and hundreds, let them be the judge on these things. Trial, yes. Okay, so God had that. So it's an interesting thing when you have, that's what it's saying here. And 21:14, if thou, however, a man acts presumptuously, that means, again, he planned it. Premeditated murder toward his neighbor so as to kill him craftily. Okay, he was plying to do it. You are to take him even from my altar that he may die. Sometimes people run. They run for religious cover. That'll save me. Well, no, it won't save you, because God's going to be a just God, and he still wants the trial to proceed. And that sentence of death for killing another person, has always been the rule. Okay? In Genesis chapter 9, so you can see that. Now, in 21:15, he who strikes his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. Well, that one stands by its own. Again, reflects back to one of the Ten Commandments. And when we talk about strikes here, we're talking about death. We're talking about death because you wouldn't have a death penalty unless you had that. So his mother shall surely be put to death. And why would you elevate? Why would you elevate mother and father? Why would you elevate them? Honor mother and father. Are the authority figures? Should be. Yes. And that reflects back on God, the reflection of authority. So there's a great respect there. And who's going to nourish and educate? Because here they didn't have schools, okay? They educated in the family. As a matter of fact, let me say this. You won't read of any prisons. They don't have prisons. They established the city of refuge. We got six of those later on. And that's just reflecting that time, too. But the point is, though, there were no prisons. And if you don't have any prisons, okay, you deal with these other types of punishment, I guess you'd say. Yes, sir?
I'm not sure I understood, but on verse 15, you say strike
was murder? No, I'm changing. I did say it, but I'll take that back. Okay? I'll take that back. All right? Strikes is to injure. Right? Excuse me on that. Good point. So that's that part. Let's see. Now, that's where he curses. The child curses the parents. And that's correct. And what is a curse? We'll go do it now. What is a curse? What is a thing that you would take them before the city? What can a child do to the point that you'd want them? More than that, yes, more ill will. But wish for their death, wish for harm to come to the parents, ridicule the treatment of them, all those sorts. It's hard to define that. But there's things that a child can do to a parent, say to a parent, physically to a parent, that can really cause. We need to take care of this child. We need to make an example. We need to get this child out of the house. Whatever it is, these sort of things are the extreme part. Now, did they do that? I don't know. But it certainly was in the rules and ordinances. And again, that's why they have judges to deal with that. Exactly right. Exactly right. If you don't honor mother and father, can you honor God properly? See? So it's something to think about, and God knew that. And also in a family unit, you know, is a unit that can promote those things that represent authority, can represent those things that represent compassion. A family unit, certainly care and love is involved. Sometimes it's tough love, but those sort of things are for the child, for the maturity of the child. And hopefully they see that in the parents, and there's reflection for us today also for that. Anything else? Good point. Well, we know in these days and times here, families live together. They weren't that far apart. There was a lot of that interaction between all the different age groups and generations of the families. So there would be a lot of help, okay, and a lot of promotion of them respecting one another. Now, what's interesting here, and we get 21:16. Let me say this too. It's going to talk about kidnapping here. Kidnapping. He who kidnaps a man, whether he sells him or is found in his possession, shall surely be put to death. Thou shalt not steal. a lot of these rules are, well, I'm going to say they're negative rules, okay? Apparently, they were issues that people had at this time. Do you make laws if it's not an issue? I mean, you can go on and on with it. So there's apparently this sort of thing going on. And God's making these rules for these people. And they said, we will obey. They said, we will adhere to these, Moses. When they were shown, you know, this on the mountain, and they were talked to by, directly to God, shown all these miracles, that we will obey. So it's interesting on that. Now, that's kidnapped. That stands by itself. And here's where we got 21:17. The idea who curses his father and mother, sure to put to death. So there's death issues here. Things so severe that there's a punishment involved. Is there teaching involved in death? There's an aspect to that. I've always thought punishment is the first issue. But there's a teaching issue too in there. Okay? If you know what's going to happen, should you do it? All right? So it's an interesting thing to keep the people focused on what is right, what is good. And it calls the parents to work on it too. Yes? Good point, Linda, about purging evil. How do you purge evil? You retrain or you eliminate? You don't just live with it. Yes, ma'am. And what's interesting, as we look through the Ten Commandments, the majority of those commandments are relationships, of neighbor relationships, aren't they? Neighbor relationships. You and I. Them to their neighbors. Them to people that weren't Hebrews. So those relationships are important to God. Matter of fact, it's part of judgment, isn't it? Second great commandment. So those sort of things need They need direction for that. They need direction. Now, in 21:18, if men have a quarrel and one strikes the other with a stone or with his fist, and he does not die but remains in bed, okay, so he's hitting, there's been a quarrel, he's hurt. If he gets up and walks around outside on his staff, then who struck him shall be unpunished. He shall only pay for his loss of time and shall take care of him until he is completely healed. I'm in a fight. I'm in a quarrel. Apparently it's happened. What do? Well, adios. No, you help, don't you? You help until he's back on his feet. Whatever your compensation would be. So those are things that actually occurred, things that apparently had quarrels, all right? Maybe not affected us. I don't think we have too many fights every day. Didn't end up in this situation. But these are things that affected them and things they had to know about. Again, God wrote these for them. Now, in these next couple of verses, 20 and 21, going back to slaves. Well, what about slaves? If a man, the master, strikes his male or female slave with a rod and he dies at his hand, he shall be punished. If, however, he survives a day or two, no vengeance shall be taken, for he is his property. Well, that sounds different, doesn't it, for a slave? Okay? Apparently, you were allowed to use a rod on a slave. Servant. And if he dies, that's another issue. But if he lives, it gets better, okay? And if you survive a day or two, that tells you that the master wasn't trying to kill the slave. He was just trying to punish him or her and bring them in line. So that's just, again, the society they lived under. Were slaves disciplined? Yes, this is apparently a way they discipline. One way. So that's just a point to say about slavery. Yes? No, it. No, it doesn't.
It's interesting.
Okay. Well, let me. You say a judge. Let me say this. Every one of these, I believe, had a judge involved. And because God had placed through Moses, delegate that to these men who were trained in the law, okay, to judge these instances, and they judge it. You hope it's a uniform judgment from one judge to another, which I would think it would be. And so, at a fair judgment. Now, you say punished, I don't know. Could have been. I would think it'd be. If there was malice involved and those sort of things, prejudgment, yeah, it probably be. But that's why the point where it says if he survives. So if he didn't, let's say if he didn't survive. If he didn't survive, that's another issue. Okay, it doesn't deal with that. So just things that happen to them every day. Now, in 12 or 21:22, a man struggle with each other and strike a woman with child so that she gives birth prematurely, yet there is no injury, no apparent injury, he shall surely be fined as a woman's husband may demand of him. He shall pay as the judges decide. And bring in the judges here. So there's a fight. There's apparently a pregnant woman there, and somehow she gets touched or pushed or whatever it is. Okay, she's not part of the fight, but there's a birth from that. Yes?
So, at the end of this verse, it tells us and confirms what you said about the judgment's turning.
Yeah. Right, right. And so what happens here, here's judges involved, she's not hurt, but the husband determines what's going to be the fine. Okay? You hurt somebody. There's got to be payment for that. There's got to be recompense for that. But in 21:23, if's a lot of currency here, but if there is any further injury, any serious injury from that fight to the mother or baby, then you shall appoint as penalty life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, bruise for bruise. So in the punishment for this, it was supposed to be things that matches the crime. Matches the crime. And that was their standard for it. Not vengeance. It goes through the judges. But you match the crime involved. If there's further injury, meaning whatever, okay, that has a repercussion from that. The judge will make that. If the mother or the baby dies, okay, then the judges will judge that. And so it's that sort of thing. And this is their standard. The standard that God has set up matched the crime. And again, don't let the individual, you can see the husband really be angry. You don't take the vengeance out yourself. You let the judges judge that. We'll take it out from there. So God's putting some buffer in there, some reasoning, some less emotionalism involved. Make a fair judgment, a just judgment. And that's something to think about. Now, yes, ma'am. He made a choice here for a baby, not fetus, okay? But he made a choice here to specifically talk about this instance in reference to that person who's living within the mother. And that reflects on an issue of today for us, abortion and that sort of thing, abortion on demand, that sort of thing. Now, today you've got mothers paying for the removal of the child, death of the child. Well, Interesting point, isn't it? Interesting point. Okay? Life for life, bruise for bruise, light punishment. So it's an interesting thing to think about as you think about a mother paying for her child to die. That life to die. So well, this is a classic verse used for that from Scripture for those who believe Scripture. Now. Yes, sir. I would think that, yes.
What if the mother did that herself?
Exactly my point. Exactly, if the mother pays someone, okay, to take the life of that child. Life for life. And whose life would be involved? Can't be. It has to be the mother's life, okay? Responsible for her own body? Yes. But how far are you responsible for your own body when there's another body in you, another person? So it's something to think about, and let's, I got you up there, just a second. One quick point. In other versions, earlier versions, they had the word miscarriage here. And when you see the word miscarriage, you're thinking death. Well, how can you have death if you say there's no injury? Right? But if you look at the next verse, it's not in the later translation, changed that to prematurely. Okay, coming in. Yes, sir. All right, let's see. In 21:26, 21:27, back to slaves. And if a man, the master, strikes the eye of his male or his female slave and destroys it, he shall let him go free on account of his eye. 27, if he knocks out a tooth of his male or female slave, he shall let him go count of the tooth. Okay? So there's a rule here that if you got some permanent injury because of your discipline, and you let them go. So what would that promote? Not discipline your slave to the point where you're doing permanent injury, right? See? Right? Because you're going to lose your slave. Use your servant. So compassion, yeah. Accommodation, yeah. Okay. I mean, you lose a tooth. I mean, you can still perform your work. But it's really be careful how you discipline. Well, I guess what I'm saying. Be really careful how you do that. You spank your child with sometimes a belt. My parents would use a mimosa limb. Okay, they're pretty flexible. All right. And appreciate them for it also. Because I needed it. All right? General comment. That's true. That's true. All right? So that, again, God's looking out for the slavery, but he's looking out for the ones who are the slaves also. All right. So we'll go on some other things. Now, we're going to move into now some areas for their cattle. And you can continue to read these if you'd like. And if an ox gores a man or a woman to death, and the ox shall surely be stoned, and its flesh shall not be eaten, but the owner of the ox shall go unpunished. So it's accidental. But in 29, if the ox was previously in the habit of goring people, then the owner has been warned, verse 29, he does not confine him and he kills a man, the ox shall be stoned and its owner shall be put to death. Interesting. Okay? And if you look in Exodus 9:5, you'll see there that, yes, the blood of man, man killed man, murder, but you also, the word livestock is there. Beast. So when a beast kills a man, it's death penalty. Death penalty. All right? So God values life, human life. So it's things to think about there. Again, you're responsible for your animals, aren't you? And there's a lot of that coming up here. Whether you cage them correctly or who you loan them to or whatever it is, these sort of things, you have responsibility for that. You see, sometimes now some dogs may get loose, pit bulls, and hurt other people. The neighboring yard or down the street to get loose. Well, who's responsible? See, the laws carry forward, don't they? The owner's responsible. All right. If a ransom in 21:30, if a ransom is demanded of him, then he shall give for the redemption of his life whatever is demanded of him. So again, the owner has to pay for that. All right. And whether it gores a son or a daughter, it shall be done to him according to the same rule. So those sort of things, the owner's going to be punished or he's going to be unpunished. So there's rules and compensation, those sort of things involved there with that. So take care of your beasts. Take care of your cattle. And again, that was what they was their primary source of income, food, those sort of things they traded with, necessary for them to live day to day. And see, 21:32, if the ox gores, theirs kills a male or female slave, the owner shall give his or her master 30 shekels of silver, and the ox shall be stoned. Well, there was a price for a slave. There was a price for it, okay? And generally they were sold, that sort of thing, for 30 shekels or so. And why is the ox stoned in these cases? And we saw in another case where the ox is not eaten. Well, because when they're stoned, the blood is not properly drained from the body. And therefore it's unclean. Unclean. And just something to think about with that, and that's why they don't eat it, okay, and don't want it. Now, and again, in 21:33, we'll deal here with a donkey. If a man opens a pit or digs a pit and does not cover it over, ox or donkey falls into it and dies, the owner of the pit shall make restitution. He shall give money to its owner, and the dead animal shall become his, okay? So just had to be careful what you do. Again, happening every day. And they needed instruction on this. They got to write these rules. Write these rules. And then 20, and again, goes on with ox there. If it dies, you can sell the ox and divide the price and how you divide it, especially in 21:36. It is known that the ox was previously in the habit of goring. We know what happens there. If you're previously in the habit of goring, what happens? The owner's going to be responsible. You got a pit bull and he's already chewed up other people, okay, and other dogs, then you're responsible because you've been warned, you know about it. Yes. Real quick, in insurance claims now, if a tree falls on your house, it's a healthy tree, it falls on your house, no problem. Insurance pays, you're gone. But if that tree is dead, and you just let it stand and stand and stand, and finally the wind blows over your neighbor's house, guess who's going to pay for it? Guess who's not going to pay for it? So that's one of the rules. Even these sort of rules apply today. All right, so things to think about. Okay, thank you all. We'll continue next time.